From the Lend Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the third day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo, globalanalytics.biz. We'll review our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday and hear all about the weather forecast, too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions on this Friday edition of our program from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago today, March corn finished a nickel lower at $3.86.5. The May at $3.93 down 5, and July down 4.75. Settlement price there at $3.99.25. December of next year at $4.75 down 3.75. Soybean futures down 13.75 on their settlement at $9.30.5. The March at $9.41.5, 14.75 lower, and May beans down 14.25 at $9.55.25. July down 13.25, $9.67.75 the settlement price there. Next year's November beans 9.25 lower, the settlement price at $9.71.5. Bean oil down 16 cents. The bean meal for the day $4.50 lower. Soft red winter wheat in the July at $5.60.5 down 4.5. The hard red July at $4.90.25 down 11 cents. Live cattle futures were down about a buck. Feeders off a buck 30, and lean hogs were down the $3 limit for this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, to take a look at what happened in Chicago and how overnight events impacted the marketplace. But first, hey, Mike, thanks so much for being with us. And, well, welcome to 2020.
Hard to believe. 25 years in the industry this year now, Todd. It's crazy.
Oh, congratulations. A quarter of a century. Fantastic. So you've got nothing but good advice for us today.
Well, you know, it's funny because it's been an extremely busy day thanks to the assault and the takeout of the Iranian leader, the number two guy in Iran, essentially. And I think the biggest question mark by producers has been twofold. With gold going higher and crude oil going higher and the dollar subdued, why is the ag market getting hit so bad? And does this signal essentially a near-term top? And do I want to sell anything before the January 10 crop report? So it's really, I think this news, and this is what we're living in today versus 25 years ago, where one news item can really shake the whole market up. Whereas I think when we had human interaction and the actual pits on the floor and people could disseminate and think through things and have conversations with one another and actually have a community, I think you were able to work through the logic of what's going on and does this really affect the supply and demand, and you would know what was going on in the crude oil pits, but it would, you know, take a while for it to transmit over into the grain pits. So it is certainly a different market, and it's not going to go back to the way it used to be. I think technology's just gotten away from us at this point.
Well, as it happened yesterday during Commodity Week as we were recording, and folks should hear that if they're listening to the home station, they'll hear it today on the air. I did ask that question. Do producers need to make a decision prior to January 10? And I suggested January 15 as well, one of those two dates across the board. What do you think?
Yeah, this is where we've talked about this, and I think we've done a good job between your reporting and the people you have on Will Radio, and that is if you have a field, an 80-acre field that did 70 bushels in beans, and you can get 9.25 at this stage of the game, that's almost $650 an acre gross revenue. I think you always want to take some of that. Same thing with $850 revenue on the corn. Right before we went on the air, I took a call from a real good client near Decatur, Illinois, near the ADM Decatur plant. And he's essentially driving into the dump right now on a Friday. And that he said to me, there's an early January, that never happens. And so they're running a posted 18 over indicator. He is telling me he's getting as much as 28 over at this point. So I think it's a real dynamic where you really want to be selective when it comes to the corn. But if you can get that $850 an acre, take it, because that's, you know, each field is an individual field, and that's a revenue threshold that you don't want to give up. And then if you have a field that's only 170 bushels, let that go for a while and see maybe if the market doesn't recover or the USDA doesn't give us a lower supply figure in the corn. And maybe then you can get up closer to 850 an acre on that field that only yielded 170. But I think that's the key to marketing nowadays, is we've got the intelligence to know exactly what field did what in terms of yield. Go after that gross revenue per field.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you know, you mentioned the basis there. And earlier in the week, I tweeted out a map that came from Philip Shaw, who's known as at Agridome, if you follow him on Twitter. But he picks those up from DTN. And there were a lot of complaints that came back to me. He said, look, my basis is not what's showing there. It's better than that. You're telling me the basis is better than that. Why DTN and the basis maps, why are these not staying up with what's actually happening on the ground? And I suppose it could be because of settlement price basis rather than midday basis, but that doesn't make much sense to me.
No, and I don't have an honest to goodness qualified answer, because I'm not in the cash business and the cash industry. But I do think, again, going back to the technology, we have different layers now of how to get cash bids. We don't have just the grain elevator website anymore. And like my newswire feeds go almost solely from either USDA or a newswire feed from the grain elevator's website. But you have these now kind of bundled type cash bids and all-in-one type packages where you're selling grain, you're buying the fertilizer, and it's its own entity almost. And so I think that's where there's probably some opaqueness, some opacity, and not true transparency. That's not a negative connotation at all. I'm just saying it's probably more opaque than it used to be, because there's new sources out there that don't necessarily report. I would maybe even equate it to maybe like the hog industry, where you just don't get a cash price anymore because some of the packers just don't report it.
Is that why futures and basis don't quite look like they're running together all the time? And they run together, but most people have complained. They think, well, there's just not that much corn out there, or the price, futures price, seems like it ought to be higher.
Yeah, this is the correlation stumbling block that producers faced 25 years ago, and it's even gotten worse, in my opinion. Very few producers understand basis compared to what they need to understand. And basis is not hard to understand. It's what's my cash price versus what's the Board of Trade price, which has the premium, and how big is that premium, and does that make me want to change my dynamic as far as how I sell? And I think this is where, if there's anything that, you know, a marketing service can help you with, that is probably the number one thing, is to separate your cash price out and introduce a futures price, because that spread, that dynamic between the two, seems to me has gotten wider and wider and wider at times. And part of that is because of the funds. The funds have, because of deflation and because of the stronger dollar and central bank policy of easing rates, the commodities have been the short side of an equity long spread. And so the deflationary mindset has pressured futures. Cash has dealt with the export market, the ethanol market, the livestock feed demand market, but it's gotten more exemplified and moves a lot quicker. And there's a lot of money tied up nowadays versus 25 years ago in these markets.
All right. I want to talk about next week's crop production report, the WASDE report. It'll be due out in the grain stocks. Oh, and the wheat numbers as well. You can attack any of those you want. Ethanol number, will it change very much next week?
I think it should, because of the improvement in some of the statistics. We just got some fresh numbers out on December production, and it was well above last year for December of 18. I think the thing for me is I would like to see wheat take over again as a leader to the upside, because then I could probably guess that the dollar is being subdued. And that's really key in light of this new Iranian news. For me, I'm a little bit of an outlier, I think, Todd, from what I've heard from my colleagues in Chicago. I'm not really looking as much for anything from the USDA in soybeans. I think they probably have more data and less harvested acres in corn and lighter test weights in corn, that if they wanted to make a lower harvested acreage number stab in corn, they would do that over the soybeans at this point, just because of where we went off when we stopped looking at crop progress numbers. And so I actually think the corn has maybe a little bit better shot by USDA to lower supply versus the soybeans. And that's going to be important, because if that's the case and South American weather is improving, why would the trade want to keep buying the soybeans? So soybeans are really red hot on my list, especially getting the 2020 market up to that 980 level this week.
And then you want to market a portion of it, I take it.
Exactly right. Yeah. My overvalue right now, using a little bit lower U.S. ending stocks for this past year, but keeping Brazil's production above 120 million metric tons, because I haven't been able to get there yet, but I did this week with some of the rains they received, and very critical rains, I might add. So yeah, if we get back to that 980 level and I don't get a supply number from USDA that feeds the bull in soybeans, I'll do another increment of 2020.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year to you as well. That, of course, is Mike Zuslow. He's at globalanalytics.biz. It's Friday, and we're always joined to take a look at the weather by Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. Happy New Year to you. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's start with a tweet that you put out earlier in the week. We know that there's an awful lot of corn standing in Michigan and Wisconsin and North Dakota. And your tweet had to do with that last state and the amount of snowfall that has managed to pile up there. What do we know about it?
Well, we know that the whole water picture in the Dakotas right now is pretty bad. And so it's not just what's on top, which, yeah, there are places. There's a huge section of the eastern and middle part of North Dakota and parts of South Dakota and even a little section of Nebraska that have already seen an entire winter's worth of snowfall. And, you know, we're really only a third of the way through winter, maybe not even that much. They get snow there until April. So, you know, this is rough. But what's the problem is underneath that, of course, the topsoil is frozen. And in some locations there, they've got an excess of 4 to 6 inches of water in the soil. So after I put out that tweet, I got a few guys responded to me saying their sump pumps haven't stopped running since September. And so they've, you know, imagine that everything's frozen, yet your sump pump just won't quit because of how much water's in the soil. And usually when we freeze that topsoil like that, and I don't see it thawing anytime soon, that means that moisture is all going to be there come spring. And that could be problematic. It just may mean very muddy conditions in early spring. Now, there's a lot of time between now and then, but it's a rough situation for those folks right now.
Yeah, we have to feel pretty sorry for them. What about the rest of us? Looks like we might be getting some rain.
Yeah, so we had a system that just skirted past us today a little bit to the south and east, and it's really soaking the southeast. Around here, we've actually got about 3 chances of rain in the next week. So we had a little bit of chance today. Tomorrow, we might even see just a little bit of snow coming in from the northwest. That clears out. And then by Tuesday, we have another shot. And then by the end of next week, next Friday into Saturday, that could actually be a much bigger event. Now, it's pretty far out there, but I'm going to be keeping a close eye on it. But as you know, the Corn Belt is drought-free right now. There's only one place, really, that I'm concerned about drought. And that's the stuff that's in southern Texas and the stuff that's in the Four Corner State. Now, just to put a bug in your ear, let's watch it. We just need to keep an eye on it, because should the pattern change by spring and there's drought in that area, we know that historically sometimes it moves to the east. And therefore, it's just an important factor for upcoming spring and summer forecast. But other than that, we're relatively mild. The pattern is favoring just wetter conditions, not snowier conditions around here.
Now, mild is good, but eventually for the wheat crop, mild could be not so great if it gets really cold really fast and we don't get much snow cover.
Yeah, and where that's a big problem, I think, is across the pond. So if we look at both ponds, one on the left and one on the right, you know, we've got over the Pacific Ocean, the flow pattern splitting and going north toward the Aleutian Islands and then south toward Hawaii. It's all coming back together over the desert southwest. Well, that same pattern is also forcing the jet stream north into parts of Europe, especially over Scandinavia. And if we push the jet stream north there, well, the temperatures are relatively mild through the Russian wheat belt, through Ukraine, through Turkey. And the problem there, of course, is they need that snow cover sitting on top of their winter wheat. Because when it does get cold, and it will eventually, you know, there could be some serious problems in that area without having snow on the ground.
Well, let's go to places where they are growing a crop actively at this point. In South America, we probably should check in on Mato Grosso and other places that raise both corn and soybeans.
Yeah, so when we think about Mato Grosso, we're already talking about a few regions that are already harvesting first crop soybeans. And in general, we're not hearing any reports that the yields are that far off. In fact, it's one of those years where when you look around the whole of the continent, actually, we just see spotty regions where there's been some weather stresses. Specifically, you know, go back over the last 10 days and southern Brazil was very hot and very dry. And I've seen some reports coming out of Paraná that the full season corn there doesn't look so good. I've also seen some of that coming out of Mato Grosso and Rondônia and some places. So there's some pockets of dryness. But if we look at the forecast, what I do see coming up here by mid-month is the southern regions, and this includes Argentina, do look to have above average precipitation. It appears that it's going to dry out temporarily in the northern growing regions, which will be Mato Grosso, which the farmers in Mato Grosso would like. They want it to be dry now so they can get that first crop of beans out. But toward the end of the month, getting into February, it looks as though the eastern and northern growing regions could go back over to wet. So what we're going to have to watch carefully is week by week to see how fast or slow the harvesting process goes for this first crop of soybeans, especially Mato Grosso. That will end up determining how quickly they're able to get in the Safrinha crop and then therefore probably the quality and quantity of that crop as well. But with the MJO taking over, it's going to be one of these things where they're going to kind of go on an on-again, off-again pattern with rainfall as the MJO cycles through its eight phases. So we got a lot to watch in South America as well.
So it's always about the MJO, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The MJO is finally our more dominant weather factor here in the near term. So for us here in the Northern Hemisphere, while we're in a mild pattern right now, remember, as the MJO goes back over and resets into phases 1, 2, and 3, that could send us back over into a colder pattern, and that may arrive sometime toward the end of the month. So winter's not over, although it kind of feels like it right now.
Hey, thanks so much, and maybe we can keep it over for a while. I kind of like that.
We'll see.
You have a great weekend, Eric. That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Yesterday afternoon, we recorded Commodity Week. We'll present part of that program now. You can hear it all up on our website anytime you want, on demand right now at willag.org. Our panelists for today included Jerry Goodell of Midland Research out of Chicago, Illinois, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois, Joe Vaklevic from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee, and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting. We started the conversation as usual by getting a list of items that we should discuss for the day. I asked Jerry Goodell for his set.
Well, of course, we have this big-time report coming coming up next week, and of course, that's going to be interesting here, looking at home final production numbers, how the yields have come out. We've got all this Northern Plains situation and how that finally wrapped itself up there. And then, of course, are we going to be able to know what kind of trade deal? Hopefully that's going to be another important factor. This trade situation, everybody, first it was, there's no way in heck they're ever going to get $40 million, but I'm not sure it really anybody cares. At this point, it's better than the $9 million or $10 million we had so far this year. So if we get 30, that's fantastic. So I think that's the other thing. That it is kind of amazing how the trade and the futures have improved themselves over since December's crop report here, slowly raising from the dead.
All right, so Sherman Nerland, we have the crop production report, the situation in the plains, we have the phase one trade deal. What did he leave out? Anything?
I can say not much, really. I mean, pretty well.
That's why I repeated them all.
I guess maybe what will farmers do here in the next 2 weeks, you know, because we are going to have a lot of information thrown out at us here with the report and with the phase one deal. I think I'm really kind of curious to see what all is going to be in the, if we ever find out all the details of the phase one trade deal, because that could make a, you know, quite a bit of difference on price projections going forward this year, and what farmers are going to need to be trying to do as far as getting some stuff hedged, hopefully at a lot more profitable levels.
Hey, Joe Vaklevic, anything on your list that we missed?
The trade deal or supposed trade deal and the report. I mean, those are your two big items. I would talk a little bit about what's driven the rally in the soybean market. I don't know that it's necessarily optimism. I actually think it's fear. It's a short covering rally. Open interest is down 18% since December 6th. It's been a short covering event largely, and I think the funds don't want to stick around to find out whether or not this is the real deal. And my fear, I think, is that we don't get what we want in that trade deal, if the details
don't quite add up to what some people had expected, that we could very quickly go back in the other direction. That's one concern that I have.
Well, I think I will drop that right into Dan Swicker's lap, because on Thursday afternoon, Dan, when I talked to you during the closing market report, you kind of alluded to this just a little bit, that the beans didn't feel all that great to you and that the technicals might have a problem. I suppose that could be because there's not much underpinning them. Is that the right way to read what you told me?
We've had a good rally, I mean, off of our seasonal lows. And, you know, I guess I'm one of these people that, you know, you buy the rumor, sell the news. And, you know, Trump did announce that we're going to have an official signing of phase one, but the market has already known that, and that's priced into the market. So I guess my question is you know, is this kind of the short-term top of maybe the commodity complex, and then we go into the winter doldrums, and then we'll see how South America unfolds, and we'll see how trade unfolds, and I guess we'll, you know, start taking a look at what everybody thinks on 2020 as far as weather goes.
Now, I know that earlier in the week I saw a list of what was supposedly in the phase one trade deal with some numbers to it. I don't recall them, and I didn't write that down. Does that make much of a difference to the marketplace, Sherman, and when it sees a list of numbers? And again, that's kind of, I often wonder, is that actual free trade too? But that's a whole different discussion, I suppose.
That's true. I mean, I think, you know, trying to see some of the details, you know, whether it's going to be some more corn or ethanol or DDGs, or whether they're going to import some wheat, I think those will make a difference. Now, you know, we obviously need to see them follow through and actually do some of these things that they're supposedly going to be talking about. But, you know, I agree with, you know, the other guys, Joe and Dan. I mean, if the numbers come out or the details come out and they're not what we're hoping for or looking at, then, you know, we probably have a lot of this priced in. And I am a little bit concerned about markets starting to fall back off once it's announced. Because, like you said, I think, like Dan said, I think, you know, the trade's been pricing a lot of this in. So I think farmers need to, you know, really be on their toes here in the next few weeks and hopefully, you know, get some stuff sold.
I think Jerry Goodell and Joe Vaclavic, I'd like you both to take this up from the perspective that each of you have been in Chicago and watched this happen at the CME Group. And Jerry, you've been around a long time, and Joe, you've been around for a while. so I want to see if there's a difference of opinion here. Jerry, how do you feel about this trade deal and how the market has reacted so far and what it will do in the future?
Well, the initial reaction, of course, is skepticism, particularly with the number being so substantially higher than it was thrown out. What? Early October, when this is all going to start, that there was a potential number, but nobody really paid attention. Then it keeps coming back at us 40, maybe 50 million. I'm not sure that the key thing this whole thing is how many bushels will that create in our particular corn and soybeans.
That's Jerry Goodell of Midland Research. He joined us for our Commodity Week recording yesterday afternoon, along with Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, Joe Vaclavic with Standard Grain, and Dan Swicker at Swicker Consulting.